keep it alive through these lines I write. I keep it live cause I thrive. I might just blow your mind tonight. I'm so hyped, but it's no hype. From this height, it's direct hits on sight. I'm your type, lend me your ears to show you that there's something in me. I'm not giving up, I'm standing right here holding these days hostage, and I'll make this my year. We turning fear into love, and the love's in the air. I love doing this cause nothing compares, nothing can share that same type of feeling when you feeling them flares. They can't catch it, it's havoc. I rip to a tear, switch the scenario. My stereos, I leave them impaired. Variables start to change, and they're all in my range. I just gotta grab it, it's all mathematics. Every step is drastic, I make it fantastic. I'm trying to take your breath away, asthmatic.
This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go through the stereo, stereo.
Yeah. Just nod your head with it, so explicit and vivid. Every image is intricate, intimate. I put my all into it, no scrimmage and no rules. I'm a pro tool, hear my heartbeat beat into the vocals. I'm so loco, lost my mind, oh no. It's ponderoso, dope so, no overdose cause it's dope yo. Man, this is house grown, mixed with some milestones. So I let the style flow, down like the Dow Jones. Bringing it with some foul tones, letting the crowd know we getting loud, so it's eardrum rudiments. Yeah, we bring it rude again. Move, little hooligan. Music for tuning in. Full time to the 10. I'm on my clock, like I told you. I'm doing this for dreams we pursuing.
The impossible has happened. Yeah, that's right. Donald Trump is the presumptive Republican nominee. We never thought it was going to happen. We tried to ignore him, then we tried to talk shit about him, and then, you know, it just did what it did. You know, Donald Trump's the Republican nominee. I don't know what that says about the state of this country or how smart the average American is, or maybe just how angry the average American is. Either way, we're going to talk about it tonight here on the Anti-Media Radio Show, here with your host, Nick Burnaby. We are longtime guests on UCY.TV. You can also listen to our show on the antimedia.org/radio. If you miss any of our shows, feel free to join us on YouTube, UCY.TV YouTube channel, or also at the Anti-Media Radio, or sorry, the antimedia.org/radio. We have our newest shows up there via YouTube, so check that stuff out. We've got an awesome store and show for you. Oh, man, I'm really bad tonight. We've got an awesome show in store for you tonight. Missed Monday because I'm a little under the weather, fighting off a cold that seems to just not want to go away, and so I'm dealing with that stuff. But so many things happening. I mean, this is just insane what's going on politically right now and geopolitically around the world. Turkey, Middle East, Iraq, things going on. It's just insane out there. But we've got a great panel tonight to try to break down the stories, break through the mainstream propaganda, and really try to cut through and get to the truth of the matters here. That's what really matters tonight. So let me introduce our panel. I'm not sure if we're going to be taking callers tonight, but if we do, I'll announce that. I think we have so much ground to cover that we may not, but you never know. If you call in, you know, feel free to call in. We may answer your call, and you can, you know, especially if you want to talk about something that we're actually talking about and not change the subject, then that's even more encouraged. So either way, joining us tonight, my longtime co-host, DB Schwartz, on the line. What's up, DB?
Hey, Nick. Just want to say, make America hate again.
Make America great for once should be the slogan. Maybe that'll come true if people get angry enough at this damn election and the way it's going. And I don't know, I guess we'll have to see. But we don't want to make America hate again. You know, we want to make America not hate anymore. But, you know, that's the thing. You know, a lot of the racism and a lot of the hate in this country had gone kind of under the radar for a while, and you know, there's sporadic hate crimes here and there and stuff, but I think Trump, for better or for worse, has really drawn that stuff out of the woodwork, and we're starting to see that there still is a lot of hatred in this country from many different sides of the political spectrum. And you know, it's not the It's not the friendly, you know, 1950s America that I think maybe some of our grandparents were used to. Maybe mine weren't so much used to that, but, you know, maybe.
Well, where do these ideas come from, though, Nick, but not the older generations?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, the 60s, the civil rights movement made many great strides in trying to bring about a little more of a equal playing field here in the United States, but it never really had its full effect. I mean, never, you know, racial and social and class equity never got realized, man. We've been turned into a very much a caste society where there's like the lower class, the middle class, and the upper class, and, you know, the lower and middle are like fusing together, and everyone's like shitting themselves wondering what the hell's going on. And that's exactly why Trump is getting so much support, because all those people that maybe are used to being middle class are now fusing with the lower classes, and they're like, oh shit, we gotta do something drastic. And that's why Trump and Sanders, maybe to a lesser extent, are really tapping into that vein, and people are wondering what's going on. Unfortunately, I mean, I think the fundamental shift in the political system, the economic system, would be more accurate, has taken place. I don't think there's going to be any reversing that. I think the American empire is now in decline. I don't think we're going to be able to go back and say, oh, we're going to have this prosperous middle class again, and you know, people are going to have a great standard of living. Empires rise and they fall, man, and we're right in the middle of the part where it's falling. You know what I mean? I don't think we're going to shift gears and say, oh, empire is going to be rising again. I don't know about that.
And it wasn't built to last, as contentious a document as the Declaration of Independence, which is essentially a declaration of traitorship. You know, that's essentially what we have, man. We're built to be the military for the ruling class of the world.
Yeah, good point, man. And we're going to talk a little bit more about that. We're going to talk about the deep state, a bunch of other stuff. We've got our amazing journalist on the line, Claire Bernish. What's up, Claire?
Not much. What's up?
Hanging in there. Just really, really dealing with the reality here that Donald Trump's going to be the Republican nominee. I really did not think that was going to happen. I really didn't. I really thought it was going to be Marco Rubio, and that it was just going to be another neocon escapade, and, you know, it was going to be a whole show and stuff. And as bad as Trump is, and I've been the biggest critic of Trump that you'll find, the only good thing that I like about the guy is that it doesn't seem like he's part of the script. Now, I could be wrong. Maybe this whole thing is just all part of their script and stuff, but it really does seem like Trump is throwing a wrench into the system here. What do you think?
I need to leave this country. I mean, if you're looking at a choice between Trump, who is a loose cannon, and Hillary, who we know is going to just bomb everything, I mean, nothing is good. Nothing good can possibly come of this.
And, you know, you said it perfectly. Trump's a loose cannon. We don't know what he's going to do. But Hillary, we already do know what she's going to do. You know, and now the thing is that it's not over for the Democrats yet. In fact, everybody was talking about, oh, there's going to be, the Republicans are going to have a contested convention, and, you know, they're going to deny Trump the nomination. That doesn't seem very likely anymore. In fact, the probability of that has fallen almost to zero. But on the other end of the spectrum, with Bernie Sanders still in the running here, he just won Indiana yesterday. He's now saying that he's going to push for a contested convention. I've got Jake Anderson as well on the line. What's up, Jake? How you doing?
Pretty good.
So what do you make of this whole thing with Sanders and Clinton? I mean, do you think Sanders is going to drag it out to the convention? Now, he's thinking that maybe if he can drag it out, denying Clinton the nomination outright, that he can win over some of these superdelegates.
I hope so. I hope he raises holy hell. It's funny. We all expected the Republican side to be the contested convention that goes deep into the summer. And I was kind of surprised at how quickly all the pieces fell yesterday. I was not expecting Cruz to drop out. I wasn't expecting any of them to drop out. Something weird happened. I think someone got a phone call. I was not expecting that. But yeah, as far as Sanders and Clinton, yeah, I think Sanders realizes that he has very little control over the Democratic Party. He has no control over the Democratic Party. He has very little control over, how history is going to remember this. But one thing he does have control over is the people who follow him right now, who would follow him to the grave, quite literally. And so I think there's some very, very careful strategy going on right now with Bernie Sanders to figure out what the best way to divest this social capital is. And it'll be very interesting to see how it goes down, because this is a once-in-a-generation moment he has here with the world listening to see what he's going to do.
Yeah, man, and we've got an article from you kind of on this whole topic that we're kind of holding on to for a strategic time. That's going to be, I think, huge when it comes out. So keep an eye out on that. I want to cover this election stuff. There's so much ground to cover here tonight. First, I want to go back to Claire, who wrote an awesome article today on Hillary Clinton. And again, I mean, it's not a huge surprise that Hillary Clinton is caught lying or anything. But we have her over here being confronted by some coal miners. Claire, tell us a little bit about this article, and then I'm going to play a little bit of the clip.
Well, she first came out a while back, I think it was March, and said that she's trying to come out as pro-environmentalist and basically said she was going to destroy all the coal mining jobs, put coal miners out of business. And she kind of backtracked on that and later apologized for saying it, but the damage was done. And then she was kind of at a meeting in West Virginia with some residents and coal miners, and they called her out on that and really put the pressure on. And you can just watch her in the video. She's kind of squirming like, wow. People need to be calling her out more and more often on all these lies and her flip-flops and everything else. She has no clear position, and this is a perfect example of that.
I got the clip here. I'm going to play a little bit of it. I'm going to just play the comments she made at the town hall, because the other part of the clip, it's really hard to hear it, and it's not going to come out good on the radio, but let's just play this one clip.
I'm the only candidate which has a policy about how to bring economic opportunity using clean, renewable energy as the key into coal country, because we're going to put a lot of coal miners and coal companies out of business. Right, Tim?
And her face right there when she says, right, Tim? She's like looking for confirmation. It's just, it's crazy.
No, wait, yeah. We're going to bring jobs there. Wait.
We're going to campaign on destroying jobs. That just is not a very good campaign strategy, I don't think. But
you're already one of the poorest states. We're not going to do jack for you.
You guys.
Well, she came back later and tried to say that she was going to give them jobs in renewable energy and stuff like that. But saying something like the way that she said that kind of discredits these generations after generations of coal miners who have really worked hard in that state. And it really belittles everything that they have done instead of, like, kind of acknowledging that maybe they could also work hard in another industry. She just kind of, like, it was really condescending.
Yeah, it was.
Why can't they be retrained for solar?
Well, that's kind of what she wants to do, but that's not the way she said it.
Yeah, it's not the way it came out at all.
And so this coal miner went on to confront her, and she totally changed her tune. And it's just one of those things where she'll pretty much say whatever audience she's in front of, she'll say what they want to hear, and then she'll change it up later on or pretend that it was taken out of context or act like, I don't know. I don't know. I guess in that way, she's very much like Trump. But it's just another one of the lies out of Hillary Clinton, and it's not a surprise that that Sanders won Indiana and that it's carrying on. It's just going to keep going and going. Because I don't think that even the Democrats are not satisfied with Hillary Clinton. I mean, she's just not a likable person. And she's got a really bad track record. Give me the issue that you care about and we could talk about Hillary Clinton. Is it foreign policy? I mean, that's where I'm my biggest issue is probably foreign policy and the drug war. And Clinton is really bad track record on both. I mean, on foreign policy, she's pretty much supported every foreign intervention and military coup and war that she's been able to voice her opinion on. And on the drug war, she has no real clear stance currently, but in the past, you know, she helped push for Bill Clinton's 94 crime bill, which imprisoned a bunch of people for drugs and stuff, you know. So she's got a bad track record, and not to mention the fact that she's being funded by private prison industry, which is notoriously against marijuana legalization and stuff like that. I mean, and then Big Pharma as well, same deal, you know. So just bad all around. An article that I wrote today, which I wanted to bring Jake in on the conversation and everybody else actually, was actually about Ron Paul. He gave a great interview 2 days ago on CNN where he basically, one of the quotes says, "I've never bought into this idea that the lesser of two evils is a good idea." He went on to say that Republicans and Democrats from Reagan to Obama are basically owned by the deep state, quote. He said that both parties are basically bought out by special interests. He said that if it comes down to Donald Trump versus Hillary Clinton, that he's going to be voting third party. I mean, this is a really big interview for Ron Paul, who's pretty influential in the libertarian community and elsewhere as well. A lot of people have respect for him, even if they don't agree with his politics. I'm one of those people. I really like Ron Paul, and I don't agree with his politics and his economics in many instances. But I have a lot of respect for the guy because he tells it like it is. He's exactly what Donald Trump claims to be. You know, everyone's like, "Oh, Donald Trump just speaks the truth and tells us." No, Donald Trump doesn't speak the truth. Donald Trump is misleading people. Donald Trump is distracting people with immigration and Muslims and stuff. Those aren't our underlying issues. And Ron Paul basically slammed all this whole two-party system, and he recently slammed the election system, calling it rigged. He has gone after the he literally said the presidential election is entertainment fabricated by the mainstream media, which is also pretty true. But mainly he slammed both of these parties as being just overly militaristic. But he made a lot of sense when it comes to the deep state, because one of the things he said is the person interviewing him asked him, you know, what would it take for you to support a candidate? And he said, "I'll support anyone who is willing to say the Republicans and Democrats are the same. And that they're both basically just owned by the deep state." And Jake, you wrote a really awesome in-depth article on the deep state, and basically why, you know, and because of the deep state, and, you know, people call it a bunch of different things. It's also, people used to call it the New World Order. People would call it the Illuminati. People call it all these other things. I mean, basically the deep state is like, who's really in control? Who's really wielding most of the power and calling the shots? And so, you know, Ron Paul basically said, it doesn't matter if it's Obama or Reagan, a Republican or a Democrat, you know, the deep state's going to call the shots regardless. Jake, what do you think about this?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's probably right. I mean, a lot of research and people have come out recently from inside the, you know, inside the Washington framework, talking about how toxic it is, and just like how deep the connections go between private industry and, you know, government policy. And yeah, I mean, it's from everything that I've read, what it sounds like to me is it really truly doesn't matter who is president, as long as they uphold a you know, kind of basic infrastructure of you know, the military industrial complex and the different defense contractors that benefit from that. And yeah, I mean, it can't be summarized in just a few sentences. I mean, it goes so deep. But yeah, it's, you know, Ron Paul, I think what he's talking about when he refers to the deep state is just the kind of a synergistic alliance that's going on between private industry and government. And yeah, it's it it doesn't matter if someone's Democrat or Republican. They're playing with the same house cards.
Well said, man. Yeah, and you know, that's the problem, dude. That is the problem, is that, you know, it doesn't matter who's getting elected, really. You know, these guys, whether they're actually anti-establishment or not, they're going to have to fall into this system that's already set up, that, you know, it's kind of run by these other interests that are at play here, you know, and anyone that really challenges that system, in a large part, Bernie Sanders kind of embodies that. You know, he gets marginalized by the media, he gets marginalized by the pundits, all the other politicians, and then even like the superdelegates and stuff. You know, they marginalize anybody that's willing to try to at least in any way stand up to that system. And, you know, Trump, for everything that he is and everything that he's not, you know, he's up against the Republican Party and stuff. I haven't really heard Trump, you know, challenge the deep state much. I mean, he called out the Iraq war based on lies and a few things here and there, but he wants more surveillance. He wants, you know, a bigger military. He wants, you know, more militarized police. I mean, Trump, you know, he may be supposedly against the mainstream media and against the Republican Party, but by all measures, I mean, he's a deep statist, right?
Trump wants to own the deep state. He wants in. He wants in on it. He wants skin in the game.
Yeah, dude. I mean, Trump is not the guy that's going to come in and really fix things in this country. He's not.
He's gonna put a brand name on the CIA and put public stocks on him.
He's gonna put the CIA in a Trump Tower, and then, you know, he's gonna say, "Oh, that's how we're gonna fix it. We're gonna save money by giving renting it to me." It's a mess. It's a mess.
Privatize CIA, privatize DARPA, privatize NASA. Just make them all instruments of war, and just unleash all the nuclear weapons and just see what happens.
You could put rockets under Trump Tower and fly it up to the moon.
Right.
You know, once he gets NASA and stuff. Oh man, crazy, crazy week in politics. Ted Cruz dropped out. Kasich dropped out this morning. I saw this hilarious GIF where Ted Cruz accidentally punched his wife and then elbowed his wife in the face. One of my buddies shared the meme. He's like, "Breaking news: Zodiac killer punches wife." It was just so funny, man. It was hilarious, but you know, it's also kind of sad that our U.S. politics have stooped to this really ridiculous level where people joke about one of our presidential candidates being the Zodiac killer. And then what was it? I think it was on Maury. There was like some doppelganger on Maury that looked like Ted Cruz's woman. And I mean, it's gotten so ridiculous. I mean, this election is like laughable, man. Like, the guy winning right now is a billionaire reality TV star. And then Clinton is like a dynasty with so much baggage and so much criminal behavior. It's just outrageous. I mean, it just makes the whole thing seem illegitimate. And maybe that's what we need. Maybe we need more people to find out that this whole electoral process is illegitimate.
There was a great headline today on Truth Out. It was election 2016. Let's drop acid and have a presidential race. I mean, that really does kind of sum it up.
This election is going to be, I think, the first true battle of hackers. Both sides are going to be attempting to steal the election electronically, and it really is going to be who is able to hire the best hacker who can cover their tracks the best. We know what's going on. It's been going on in every election since 2000, maybe before. And then it's naive to think that people with that kind of power aren't going to be utilizing hackers to try and steal this election. So this will be the first election truly and totally a hacker war. That's all it is.
So another interesting little caveat here is that I read today that I think it was the Libertarian Party doubled its new amount of new people signing up for the party. So the prospect of Trump versus Clinton is shifting people away from the two-party system, just like you know, Ron Paul is saying in his interview a couple of days ago, it's very true. And, you know, people are really getting tired of the two parties. And another thing that's going on is that now, according to a Reuters poll, 51% of people in the United States now think that the electoral process is rigged. And going back to what Jake was saying, whether it's electoral electronic rigging or rigging via superdelegates or just having these really arcane rules that are in place for these candidates to manipulate, you know, people are just fed up with this electoral process. Now, what the thing that we have to wonder about is whether anyone's going to actually do something about it, or people are just going to sit back and whatever and just let Trump do his thing or let Hillary Clinton do her thing. I wrote this article the other day that I spent a lot of time on. Unfortunately, didn't go as viral as I had hoped. But it was about how, you know, taxation without representation is like going on right now as we speak. I mean, it wasn't dealt with back during the American Revolution. That was one of the big rallying cries. It's like no taxation without representation, and now we're right back to it. In fact, many people would argue it's worse, because now we have this illusion of representation, and we got a huge amount of taxation compared to what the colonists were dealing with. At least then, it was like, yeah, we got a king and we have no say in what the hell he does. Well, you know, that's what we have. And the taxes were lower back then, actually. Now it's like people actually think that the system is representing them. At least they did. Now we got 51% of the people saying, okay, yeah, we think it's rigged now. But I started finding out a little more about this when I found out that a lot of these primaries are actually publicly funded by the taxpayers, even though they're being held by the Democrats and Republicans, which are pretty much private clubs. And especially in the close primaries where, like, if you're not a Democrat registered, you can't even vote. And in New York, even if you are, like, 100-something thousand people got, like, unregistered to vote, or, like, their party affiliation changed or something. Like, you know, so people that aren't Democrats in New York paid for that election, and then they weren't even able to participate in it. But going a little deeper, it's like the oligarchy that we're dealing with here, where according to a study in Oxford, I think it was Stanford. Hold on, let me pull it up here. Princeton, there we go. One of those damn universities. According to Princeton, you know, the rich basically get 90% of the legislative decisions in their favor, and the poor or the average American only gets about 10% of legislative decisions in their favor. So therefore, basically what I'm saying here is that, you know, we don't have representation. We elect people in theory, but they don't represent us. They represent the deep state. They represent the oligarchs. They represent the billionaires. You know, and so, like, we're dealing with this system, and the only reason it's still in place is because people keep putting stock in it. People keep believing in it. People keep thinking, oh, yeah, you know, the system represents us. You know, all we got to do is vote harder, and they'll start, you know, actually doing what we tell them. Congress has a 9% approval rating, and that's been going on for, like, years now. You know, they're not going to change. They're not going to represent us. I think there has to be a much different approach. And Jake, I wanted to go back to you because I want to know what you think about, like, how can, you know, these various groups, because you've got, as I mentioned, the libertarians' ranks are now surging because of Trump. You've got the Bernie Sanders movement, you know, and if he loses, you know, all of those people that are going to be supporting him that have refused to vote for Hillary, and I believe a lot of them won't. You've got the people further to the left that agree with, like, the Green Party, Jill Stein, and all that. And then you got the anarchists and everybody else in between. I mean, what can all these people do to make some kind of change, either within or outside of the voting system?
Well, I mean, I personally, I mean, I'm supporting Jill Stein, but I think it's less important which third party candidate you're supporting, as long as you are supporting a third party candidate. And I think that if everyone supported the person that truly stood for their values, we would have something approximating democracy, if they let the vote go through. I don't know. I mean, there's so many different filters to this in terms of whether it would even matter, whether we're still being represented, whether we want anyone ruling over us. But at the bare minimum, I think that we have to support the idea of standing up against the establishment. And if that requires Ron Paul supporters and Jill Stein supporters joining together, if it involves McAfee supporters joining with Tea Party people, whatever it takes, people are going to have to put aside their smaller differences, particularly identity politics, and they're going to have to stand together against the oligarch. That's just seriously the only way.
DB, I mean, you've talked about this before, but do you think that being with the fact of the whole Clinton thing and how huge of a following and loyal of a following Sanders has attracted, and how a lot of people are dissatisfied on the Republican side with Trump, I mean, do you think this election is going to signify the breaking up of these big corporate political parties? And do you think we'll see maybe three or four parties coming in the following elections?
I mean, that's the scenario I think is feasible more than anything else. But the thing that freaks me out, dude, is like Trump or Clinton, and especially Clinton, will lead us to a war. And I think Sanders would basically be like Carter and basically be able to stifle that. So, you know, it goes without saying, man, the next war, if it becomes beyond a regional one, is going to be uncomprehensibly horrendous. So I don't want to be here when that happens, or don't want it to happen at all, dude. That's my main concern right now.
Yeah, and I think there's a growing sentiment of people that are, you know, in that boat. I think Americans in general are pretty much war weary. If you look back, the last time there was like a pretty publicized attempt to overthrow a government, which would be Bashar al-Assad in Syria back, was it 2013? Americans stood together, man. I remember because we were some of the anti-media team was some of the central organizers of that movement. And I remember here in San Diego when I organized a big rally down in Balboa Park for to rally against overthrowing the Syrian government. There was Tea Party people out there. There was progressives out there. There were Muslims out there. There was all walks of life out there opposing this war. I think Americans are very war weary. I think they're tired. We've been in Afghanistan. The war in Afghanistan is now the longest war we've ever been in. I mean, how does that make any sense? This is the longest war. It's longer than World War II. It's longer than World War I. And you know what? A lot of people are dying over there, man. It may not be Americans, but there's a bunch of people over there, Afghanis, a bunch of people in Iraq. I think I just saw an article about how almost 5,000 people a month are still dying in Iraq.
Nick, I think I read something yesterday where it was 5 million dead, 5 trillion spent. That's the two markers right now.
I would say that's pretty close. Ever since the war on terror was started, you know, between Afghanistan and Iraq. A Navy SEAL, an American Navy SEAL, just got killed over in Iraq, and they're sitting here telling us, oh, well, we don't have boots on the ground, but, you know, the boots that we do have on the ground, they're not in combat. And yet somehow a Navy SEAL gets killed last week, and it's like, what? Like, you guys said that there weren't boots on the ground, they weren't doing any fighting. It's like, okay.
He might have saw something, though. You never know.
Yeah, I mean, there's no telling what the hell happened to that poor guy. But you know, it's just it's a mess. And you're right, man. We can't afford to have a World War III. And I think Einstein was the one that said it. He's like, I don't know what kind of weapons World War III will be fought with, but World War IV will be fought with sticks and stones. Because he's saying the technology we've got now is so advanced that it's going to set us back to the Stone Age if we have a war right now.
And there's evidence that humanity's had that happen before. I mean, there's a crater in India that's still radioactive.
Yeah, I mean, it would set us so far back that, I mean, shit, dude, we would be literally set back to the Stone Age. And that's, I don't think that's something that anybody really wants. But it's the hubris of these asshole politicians and these power brokers and these oligarchs that are greedy as hell that have almost always led us into these big wars and stuff. And so, you know, it's about time. Now that we've got the internet and we've got this connectivity and we've got the knowledge and the information at our hand, it's time to put a stop to this shit, man. And I think America, the American people, are tired of wars. They may be distracted more than any other country in the world. They may be divided and conquered more than anyone, but I think a lot of people can agree they don't want World War III. And that should be the rallying cry of anybody that's trying to get outside of this Trump-Clinton paradigm, is like, let's not have World War III. Maybe we can use that to unite people together. I don't know.
Well, they just signed into law that women can be drafted. I mean, do we have to make something as pandering as don't send your daughters to die or something stupid like that to wake people up?
Something, man. And you know what? I mean, that itself is pretty troubling. And I forgot to add that to our notes, but that's also something we covered on the anti-media a couple of days ago. In fact, it was an opinion piece by Ron Paul that we syndicated. And, you know, the draft itself is a really bad idea. The draft is pretty much a form of slavery. It's forcing people in to go and fight and risk, put their lives on the line for the government. And for these bureaucrats that are trying to start wars and stuff. And now they want to, you know, put everyone on the line, including women. That's pretty telling. I mean, why would they choose now as a time to do it, especially now with all this talk, with all this tension with Russia and all this stuff? And we are on a brink of a major, major war. I wouldn't quite say World War III yet, but I mean, who's to say we're not already in World War III? We've already got conflicts going on in like a dozen countries. We've got military bases in 100 countries. We've got 1,000 military installations around the world. I mean, the U.S. is already engaged in a worldwide empire. It's only a matter of time before all of those places that we're colonizing start rebelling against us at once, and then we start calling it a world war. But do we really want to draft everybody up and go have them fight? This is very, very troubling. It's very troubling. Claire, I want to ask you about it. You know, since you probably didn't have to register for the draft. I remember when I was 18 and I received that letter in the mail and I was like, wait, what is this? And it's like the language and the way they say it, it's so nice. It's, oh, you must register for the Selective Service. And if you don't, you could be thrown in jail, you know, and I didn't really know what it was, and then later on I was like, oh shit, that was the draft that I was having to sign up for right there, and they threatened me under penalty if I didn't do it. What do you think about this, Claire, as far as the women having to sign up for the draft now?
Just to
be perfectly clear, it's not fully signed into law yet. It was just passed through the committee in the House, I believe, but there's a really good chance it's going to become law really soon.
I have a lot of issues with the draft in general. I don't think that anybody should be conscripted into serving their government who they likely don't agree with in the first place. I mean, if a country has to have a military, it should be an all-voluntary, it should all be voluntary. I mean, I cannot imagine forcing people to do anything that against their will like this, particularly when it involves likely killing other people. I mean, that's just absolutely absurd. So, I mean, yeah, that might make it equal, but I don't think anybody should be drafted. So this kind of leaves me speechless. I'm surprised it got this far. I'm surprised that there still even is a, you know, that anybody still has to register for the draft in this day and age, considering how huge our military already is. I don't know. I think it's a really bad move.
And what's troubling to me is that I have really not seen any outrage. I really haven't.
Yeah.
And I see a lot of dudes out there saying, oh, well, you guys wanted equality. Well, here it is, you know? And it's like, really, that's your answer to this? It's like, if we want equality, how about we all equally don't have to be enslaved by the government to go fight and die for bankers' wars and shit like that? I mean, that's what you should be saying.
There can be devastating social consequences when women go to war, because who's replenishing the population of men that inevitably, you know, perish in these conflicts? Nobody. Actually, the people that are, you know, historically have been, you know, responsible for that die themselves with this new draft law. So, I mean this becomes genocidal all over the world, kind of.
Not good. And as I said, I haven't seen very many people angry about it or upset about it, and that's a bad thing. I guess the reality of it is that since we don't have a draft going, like, right now, and, like, since people aren't being drafted at this moment, no one really – like, it's not really set in. It's like, oh yeah, if, you know, but come on. We haven't had a draft since Vietnam. That's not never going to happen again. That was only a couple decades ago, man. And I, with this tension going on right now with NATO and Russia and the Eastern Axis, China, and all this crap going on, the rearming of Japan and everything that's happening, it's not that far-fetched that a giant war erupts and that – women and everyone else is going to get drafted up and have to go fight. And that's one of the reasons why I'm really, really genuinely considering leaving the United States in the near future, especially if Clinton becomes a nominee. Because
I'm right there with you. I mean, for real this time.
Yeah, seriously, because I know Clinton has a very, very high probability of starting a very large war with Russia. And with Trump, it's still kind of up in the air. Is he going to start World War III? Is he not going to start World War III? We're not sure yet. So at least we have that with Trump. You know what I mean? So it's like, oh shit. Not either way, it's not a very good prospect. That's why I'm hoping that, I don't know, something happens here. Third party makes some kind of record-breaking runs, and maybe it calls into question the legitimacy of these two parties, and maybe. Or maybe people abstain from voting and takes away their mandate. You know, the mandate that Obama supposedly had in the last election. I think, like, what was it, like 40%, 30% of the voting population, the voting age population, eligible voters voted, and that means only half of them actually voted for Obama, which tells you that, like, at the most, 20% of the voting population actually voted for Barack Obama in 2012. And yet he's allowed to dictate all the policies for 100% of the country. That to me is not a mandate. Maybe the numbers have to go even lower for people to send the message. Or maybe we need to break up these big parties. I'm not sure exactly the route. Let's shift a little bit from this politics stuff, because we've got another huge anniversary today. Today is not just May the 4th be with you Star Wars Day, which, cool, I'm a Star Wars fan too. I picked up an awesome shirt yesterday in – I was down in Tijuana. I picked up an awesome Stop Wars shirt. It's like someone like hand-painted over a Star Wars shirt and turned it into Stop Wars, so I'm pretty happy about that. But another thing happened today. On this day in history, back in the 70s or 60s?
1970,
Kent State. I don't know the exact details. Claire, I was going to ask you to fill us in a little bit.
Well, this is obviously, it's still a kind of a controversial event. There are still open questions about why basically the National Guard fired on unarmed protesters for what seemed like no reason whatsoever. And they did so under the order of the Ohio governor, because at the time the National Guard was like the Ohio National Guard. It wasn't a federal branch. But these protesters, there was some controversy in the days preceding, because the president had announced that we were expanding the war from Vietnam into Cambodia, and so there had been a lot of protests across the country. And students were gathered and stuff, and they were protesting. A ROTC building got burned down on the Kent State campus, but it turned out that there is no possible way that students could have done it, and it actually looks like somebody who knew how to start fires had actually burned the building down. So, but they had widely reported that it was student protesters who had done it. So 2 days later, when students gathered and were having kind of, you know, rallies on campus, they sent in the National Guard to kind of keep them under control so they wouldn't supposedly burn down any more buildings, which they never did in the first place. And suddenly, without warning, these guardsmen opened fire, live fire, and killed 4 students and wounded 9 others. And it's that song from Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young that was, you know, Ohio, 4 dead in Ohio. That's what that comes from and stuff. I mean, this is, for people who don't think that the government will do anything to protesters or won't get violent with their own people, they just need to really look to this event. And there was another shooting like it not long afterwards. It's really worth remembering. This was the moment in history where people said this was when war came home. So I think that was a big turning of the tide for the country and the mood. It was very polarizing, and none of that has ever really abated.
Well, I mean, we saw it manifest itself in Ferguson, right? I mean, according to many, many accounts, and of course, if you watch in the mainstream media, you're going to say, oh, those thugs did this, and they burned their own community. But if you look at the reports from the ground, you'll find out that really it was the cops that triggered the riots. With their heavy-handed tactics, and you know the cops have had this reputation now, and the same thing happened in Baltimore, and many of the riots that have gone on were triggered by just heavy-handed policing and stuff, and that's pretty much what went on in Kent State. It was just an overreaction, and you know they.
Well, it's a bigger issue because it's really the quashing of dissent. I think that the '60s kind of brought the realization to the government that people in large numbers really can affect change, and if they're not doing the kind of if all of these people don't want the wars that the government is providing for them to, you know, if they don't like that paradigm, they need to quash all of the dissent so that they can still conduct their wars. And that's obviously still going on to this day. That's, you know, that's why we have militarized police that quash dissent. That's why police get away with killing people kind of, you know, whenever they want to, pretty much. It still goes on, obviously, but we're so used to it now, and it's so ingrained, like, in our conscience. I don't think people are really aware of the kind of the larger picture of it's a matter of dissent. It's not a matter of all these individual cases. It's like a very big picture.
Yeah, and they ramped up the technology too, because you know back in the '60s, '70s. They had a lot of like psyops and stuff like that to try to divide and conquer these protest groups, and you know it worked in many ways. I mean they tried to do it against Martin Luther King. It didn't work so well with him. That's, you know, one of the reasons why he probably got assassinated. But they did it with the Black Panthers, and it worked on them. And they did it with a lot of the protest groups. And in general, it worked. They did the war on drugs, which we found out from that Nixon advisor just recently. That was part of the whole, you know, crush the anti-war movement, crush the Black Liberation Movement and stuff. But what they didn't have back then was like this super high-tech surveillance and way to crush and way to control dissenters. You know, back then, just like with Kent State, they had to put it down with assault rifles. Now they can just spy on people, blackmail people, get people, you know, trick people. And, you know, the FBI now is pretty notorious for like creating terrorism out of like just people that are having trouble in their lives, and they plant violent thoughts into their heads and supply them with the fake weapons to carry out, you know, horrible things. I think that this war against dissent, this war against protest, war against anyone that's opposing what the state wants to do, has gotten – all it's done over the years has gotten just more high-tech. The NSA, you know, and the dragnets and the wiretapping, the Stingray technology, which is huge. Here in San Diego, it's going on like constantly. They're using the Stingray technology, which is just this – it's like a fake cell phone tower that scoops up all your communications within a given area, you know, and they've just gotten really high tech with this stuff.
Consider, you know, I want to bring up here too, consider that countries around the world, but particularly the U.S., they're scooping up riot gear in very large quantities, like both live and non-lethal weaponry and all sorts of stuff like that. So there, with all of the kind of tumult in the country and the political mood that's going on in this atmosphere, something like Kent State would be like small potatoes compared to what it seems like they're actually preparing for. So the idea of quashing dissent is extremely important right now. It's very pertinent to this time.
Yeah, and you know, the other thing, like, think back in like the in Kent State, for instance, if the FBI wanted to spy on the Kent State protesters, they'd actually have to have like a guy in there pretending to be one of the protesters and trying to get information out of people. Now they've got all your cell phone information. They've got drones that are going to be flying over, like they did in Baltimore. They're maybe drones, maybe just regular airplanes flying over, conducting really high tech surveillance. You know, and so it's the stuff has become much more high tech, and I just, you know, it's something that we need to be aware of. I mean, if we're going to oppose this massive empire, the time to do it, you know, the window is shrinking, I think, and sooner or later what I'm saying here is it's got to be done before we got RoboCops on the street, because at that point I think it may be too late. You know, and at that point, the dystopian future that we've been all fearing and warning about and trying to prevent, when that happens, I mean, it's, you know, the deal is sealed, and you know, RoboCop's going to make you do whatever, and there's not going to be a human behind the wheel to have any kind of empathy or have any conscience. It's just going to do what they're told. You know, and the drones that we're using overseas, they're already doing that. A lot of them are run on algorithm; they're not even operated by humans. And they just follow orders, you know, and even, you know, as bad as the cops are here in the United States, and as much as we talk about, oh, they just following orders, and that's why they kill people, and that's why they do all these things, there's still a human being behind that riot mask, you know, and they still got some kind of conscience deep down within, and maybe one of them breaks ranks, or one of them turns into a whistleblower, or one of them says, you know what, maybe this isn't right, maybe we shouldn't be beating up these protesters. But when we got RoboCop, who's going to say anything? And it goes back to what Jake was saying. It's going to be even more of just a big hacker thing. You know, I think the window is shrinking. I think people need to really start gearing up for the reality of what's happening. And maybe, you know, just maybe this election will be the switch that is flipped that starts making people realize, shit, something's got to be done. I don't know.
I agree. I think that I really think that this is the moment in time where it's, either we kind of go over the edge with apathy and just like, oh, it couldn't possibly happen here, and kind of keep going and pay the price for that, or we kind of snap to attention and do something about it and actually try to affect change while we still can. I mean, the kind of, as if the militarization of cops isn't bad enough, militarized robotic cops and, you know, drones and remotely controlled things, and there are just so many different avenues that can go wrong at this point, and it is kind of narrowing. The window is narrowing.
It really is. So that's just another thing that we got to keep in mind as we move forward here. And I think that this is our best chance, this election here, 2016. It's our next best chance to get people to realize that something ain't right. And, you know, the people out there supporting Sanders, they're already like halfway there. They already understand that something's not going on, something wrong is happening, and they're young, and they're the people that we need. These are the people that are going to be out there in the streets when we need them, probably, you know. And they're already halfway there. They already understand something's right. Maybe you know, voting for Sanders is their way of at this point in time is their way of expressing that. But you know, in the inevitable scenario where Sanders is, you know, taken out of the election, all those people are going to be looking for something else. And maybe they'll be the ones that will be helping us really affect some real change. And, you know, being out there on the streets and actually stop shutting shit down, that's the way to do it, man. Economics is the way that we can really get the tide to shift. And, you know, we've talked about this plenty of times before too, on that theme of RoboCop. All these people in the military also will, I think, have to make this choice And I know me and Jake talked about this a few times, about this scenario where it's like, you know, those people in the military, are they going to be, you know, on our side, or are they going to be against us? I truly think that a lot of them, if not, you know, and people move in groups, you know, and so a contagion can start and people start talking. And sooner or later, I mean, the military turns against the power structure. I think it's a possibility. But, you know, as much as I don't like to talk about revolutions and stuff, because I just, you know, revolutions have been, they've had a, to say the least, they've had a mixed track record in the past. Time is coming short, you know, and when the military is replaced by robotics and drones and Terminators and stuff like that, you know, at that point, it's going to be too late. You know, the time is now, and the AI, the technology is creeping up on us so quickly now that it's going to be just a matter of time before it's all replaced, all the humanity that is involved in policing and in armies and wars and all that stuff is replaced. Then what? You know, that leaves us with a really big what if. Jake, you still there?
I sure am.
So what do you think about this, man? I mean, RoboCop, automated armies and all this stuff. I mean, is our time now? Is it like, what do we have to do? I mean, it's like, this is the thing that worries me more than anything, is that I as much as I want to wait and, you know, wait for the right time, wait for the right moment, I feel like, damn it, we're, our hand is being kind of forced here, where something's got to happen really soon here before it's a little bit too late.
Well, Nick, it's, you know, there's only so much you can do. It's like what we were talking about the other night when I was visiting you and you brought up Fahrenheit 451. And he talked about the character who brings up the Phoenix and how, you know, ultimately we're regurgitating, we're compiling, we're pushing forth knowledge to a future generation. And that hopefully, what was it, the line that we'll have a giant steam shovel and we'll bury war under it or something like that, right?
Yeah, a giant steam shovel and bury war forever.
I don't think there's any one person or one movement or one army or one anti-army that's going to do this. The human race is, you know, just this demented beast that is probably going to destroy itself. And, you know, this, you know, who knows how many different iterations of us we'll see on this, on the planet, and whether we'll be in machine form or not. But, you know, to harken back to the Fahrenheit 451 thing, you know, we just have to keep, you know, exposing as much truth as possible. One has to hope that if artificial intelligence pops up, that they're going to err on the side of truth, which would destroy the state. I personally think that the force that can ultimately bring down the deep state is artificial intelligence. Give it 50 to 100 years, but that's my opinion. But hey, I'm just a sci-fi nerd.
Hey, you never know, man. But yeah, Fahrenheit 451, I just finished that book and it was the first time I read it. I huge, huge fan. And the ending of the book really struck me hard. Back to what you were saying, Jake, is that, you know, all humanity has to do, really, we don't got to go out and get bloodied in the street. We don't got to go fight revolutions. We don't got to fight world wars. The biggest thing that humanity can do is remember. And that's what that book, that was the main lesson of that book, is we have to remember all the stuff that's gone on, all and you know, the good, the bad, the ugly. I mean, the false flag, the Gulf of Tonkin that got us involved in Vietnam. I mean, all the stuff that has gone on, we have to remember it so that we can see it when it happens in the future. We can say, oh, no, that's happened before. We can't let that do this or do that. We have to remember all these mistakes and the nuclear bombs and the world wars and all this crap that's gone on, all these dictators, these empires, these political ideologies, fascism, and all the stuff that's happened. We got to see it when it comes, you know. And I think maybe with Trump, that's why Trump is actually getting opposed at like every step, every speech. There's protesters because people are remembering that fascism sucks. And so maybe that's a good sign. I don't know. But anyway, that's the Anti-Media Radio for tonight. We'll catch you guys next week, Monday, Wednesday. Yo, here we go through the stereo.